Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Reveille, reveille, reveille!
To another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have five rounds of the magazine. Round number one, a down in his luck Air Force veteran got his vaccine shot and got more than a boost to his immunity, my friends. Love seeing little feel-good stories like this. A smile on a veteran's face makes the world go round. Round number two, our friends in New Zealand pulled off an insane rescue of an American in Antarctica. I don't think we talk enough about how really remote Antarctica is, and like whenever you go on an expedition there, even when we looked at it this summer, like because we were watching this documentary on Antarctica, and we're like, I wonder how much it would be. Did you know the cheapest you can get to Antarctica, unless you fucking take a boat there by yourself, is like 10 grand to get?
I would have said
like $10,000.
Like, I would have said maybe $3,000 or $4,000. Yeah, because nobody's going there, so very expensive.
They don't have very many like airports and shit either, so they're all going to be very smart. But the New Zealand Air Force really helped them out, stepped up and did a dangerous mission. Shout out to them. Round number three, Secretary Austin and the Secretary of Defense talked about the future of artificial intelligence in the military, and it's absolutely wild some of the things that the military is going to try to do. I really believe that places like DARPA, they hire people who would probably be sociopaths or psychopaths to come up with some of these weapon systems that they have. It's insane. Like, to think about this, you have to be pretty twisted to come up with some of the ideas that they have.
Well, we used to have this video game where you were the Taliban and you got to pick where you'd put bombs and all sorts of crazy stuff. And like, we all got really into it. And now sometimes I'll be like getting on the subway and be like, that'd be a good spot for a button. And then I catch myself. I'm like, no, but yeah, you got to be a twisted. I don't know why I just said that
was
out loud.
A secret. No, I think that's a great point. That's a secret that we used to, it was like a consequence of the way that canine has to train. Like when you're doing IED training, is the trainer has to hide things in like mountain towns or in different areas, the way that you would think somebody does. And then when you take yourself back from the trainer spot and put yourself in the handler position, like I did when I went to Iraq, it was extremely helpful that I was the one that was planting essentially the IEDs for so long, where I knew where I would hide it if I was out on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it got sense. A twist in my, I just watched Robo. This is especially troubling. I just watched RoboCop for the first time. Sheesh. Mm. Yikes.
What's going on with that? I don't know if I've seen RoboCop in like 20 years.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's this RoboCop. He's literally a robot cop, and the RoboCop's robots.
That wasn't RoboCop.
Oh, okay.
Arnold Schwarzenegger wasn't RoboCop.
Okay.
Maybe it was a different Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Anyways, we got to get a handle on these robots, is what I'm saying.
Was it Total Recall?
It was a total mess, I'll tell you that much. Just can't trust these damn things. So I'm very excited for that round.
Robots, were you just watching Terminator?
It's neither here nor there.
No,
there
now I need to know, what movie were you watching?
He was half metal.
Yeah, that was Terminator.
Okay.
I need that. I mean, if you could be T2 guy, the guy that gets his head smashed in and it's like magma and it goes back together again. Mm-hmm. If Secretary Austin can design that, sign me the fuck up. I'll learn this right now to become T2.
You could be totally reckless on longtime toolies if that was the case. You could really
time. Like, oh, I don't need a fucking safety switch. I'll just do this right now. Doing electricity stuff. No need to push the breaker. I'm just going to electrocute the shit out of myself and respawn. Respawning would be incredible.
That would be pretty cool.
I think God should have given us the ability to respawn 5 times.
Only starfish got it. How fucked up is that?
Wow.
And lizards.
Oh, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You always forget lizards, Kate. Round number four, Kate and I interviewed a UFO expert named Ben Hansen about the national security implications of the DOD's UFO report. But we also talked about anal probes, because when I put it out on Twitter, that's what people wanted to know. If you wanted to know it, you're going to hear it from an expert. Why are they obsessed with our buttholes? It's a big, big question that deserves answer, and you're going to get that in this podcast. And finally, round number five, a British airman crashed through a roof in California, and shocking reports say he was not there to what, Kate?
Sweepy chimney, governor. Woo, woo, woo.
too, baby. I'm all you need.
And the little roof that he crashed through, clay roof. That's clay. Not the type that you want to go through because mm-mm. that would hurt. Like those no. kind of old Mexican roofs, they'll get you.
Yeah.
They'll get you right where the sun don't shine.
Bet that mm-hmm. made quite a sound. Mm. My goodness. Yeah,
big time.
Yep.
Yeah. And speaking of getting crashed and broken into, it happened again to our guy Cons with his fucking sunglasses again, right?
Ah! So no shit. There I was. We're on a party bus, which was a blast. Because who's ever been on a party bus?
Love a good party bus.
Had a bad time. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, she was just really into the music. She sat on my lap, leaned a little too far into me, broke my Shady Rays. I was distraught, but fret not. I reached right out. They're like, Cons, we got you. There's already a new pair in the mail the same day for me. I was all
they're gonna get so annoyed with you. They're just gonna be so annoyed with you constantly having to send it.
Yeah,
they're like, this guy's back at it. We appreciate because it makes the ad read more natural.
Yeah,
but goddamn, dude, you're killing us here.
Please but stop Shady breaking Rays our sunglasses. Never understood.
But they've never understood why sunglasses were so expensive, so they sought out to change it, and they did. Cons is living proof of that. They have premium polarized shades at a fraction of the price of the big name brands, especially if you have to get three in the same season, like Con did. The craziest thing about Shady Rays is their warranty. They will send you a replacement if they're lost, broken for any reason, even if you're on the party bus dropping it low. Maybe you're listening to Tail Feather by Nelly. Who knows? It doesn't matter what happens. If you drop them in the ocean like I did my watch, they will replace those bad boys for free. Shady Rays also provides 10 meals to fight hunger in America with every order placed and have donated 15 million meals to date. They stand behind their product and told our team that anyone has a problem, they'll throw the profit out the window, do what it takes to make it right. Make sure that you go to ShadyRays.com/ZBT to get 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. You're going to get buy one, get one free. Change the way you wear sunglasses and join the team that has your back for life. Shady Rays is running the deepest deal this season right now, exclusively for us. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com. Again, that promo code is ZBT. Let's get going with some actual stories of the day. First of all, well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Kate's long journey of finding daycare is finally over with.
Yes,
our long national nightmare is finally over, everyone. I went to several in the area, walked out of a couple and burst into tears because I was like, I cannot leave my son here. Maybe I was being too picky, probably. I don't know. But I finally found a legit solid one that I feel good about that meets, because my son's, it's not like a regular baby, he's advanced is the problem. Mm-hmm. And he's better looking than most babies, he's smarter than most babies, so he can't just go anywhere kind of thing. Well, I finally found one, left the tour yesterday, said sign him up, so I should be able to get better back into the swing of things with work, going into the office, because I thought, I'm like, oh, I can work from home with a baby, how hard can it be, what does a baby do? Turns out it's
your expectations versus reality is so perfect. You are the living embodiment of the SpongeBob meme. A few moments later, and like everything is completely
and not just, I mean, going all the way back to even before you had the baby, like during your pregnancy, there were a few instances where you would say things and we kind of shook our heads and said, I don't know if it's gonna work out like that.
The amount of onesies you need.
I was truly never around an infant or a newborn or a baby before, really. And so I thought, oh, you lay them down and they're chill all day until they start crawling or something. Not the case. They really do require a large amount of attention.
Imagine that.
Holy shitballs, my God. Anyway.
They're little assholes in that way where they constantly need something.
They really, truly, very high maintenance.
So needy.
Didn't know. So that's exciting. Number two, speaking of number two, I really missed the Marine Corps the other day because my Marine buddies, they were like my brothers. Like I could, there was nothing off limits. I could tell them anything and like whatever. And I had a really funny poop yesterday where it was like one of those, you're on the struggle bus. You're like, man, this thing's going to be a honker. And then I stood up. I like, why I stood all this toilet paper. It was the size of a BB. It was just one little turd. It was like the size of a pea.
What a letdown.
And I took a picture of it. I can't remember.
Why did you send it to us?
Because I went through a Rolodex in my head. Who can I send this to? This is golden. This is hilarious. This tiny little single little poop alone in the toilet. And I went through this big Rolodex in my head. It was like a baby rabbit had a shit. Anyway, I went through, I'm like, my old rugby friends. they're all married with kids now. I haven't talked to them in a long time. It'd be weird if I came out of the woodwork. My old college friends, I don't know. My high school buddies.
You should have played cell phone roulette, where it's like you have like a almost like a slot machine where you just go through it, and then whoever you land on, that's who you send it to.
That's who I should have. Well, then I was like, my Marine buddies, for sure I could send this to. But then it's been a little while. Like, we said our Veterans Day hellos, but I need to get back in touch with them a little bit better.
What about the Lady Marine Facebook group you're in?
Ooh. I could have done that. Yes, I absolutely probably could have put it there. And that probably would have been well received. But it just made me miss the Marines. Like, if I was closer to my time in service, I could have easily sent this to the whole squad. And they would have been like, lol. But yeah, it made me feel kind of lonely for the Marines. I can't send it to you guys. Like, I feel like there's rules. Because you can't send, like, chaps. You can't send a married. I feel like you cannot send a married man a photo of your poop. Right?
I understand the logic there.
I get the logic, but I don't know.
It crosses some kind of line. It was in one of your holes.
All right. So if you wanted to send a picture to one of your friends, one of those good ones would be if you crashed through a house in San Diego or in California, like a certain Air Force member of the British Air Force actually did. But before we get into that, that's not round one.
That's not round five.
But we can
that's
do
round
it.
Five. Yeah. All right. No, let's do round one. We'll do a little bit of round one goofing. I got off track. I tried to make a smooth segue.
That segue was about to be amazing until it wasn't.
I threw us off.
So what do we got for round one, Kate?
Round number one. First of all, have you guys ever won any kind of lottery, scratch off, big raffle at a baseball game, any kind of thing like that? Any big prize?
The only thing that I've ever won was a VCR. Won a VCR whenever I had, back in elementary school when they give you that packet of stuff that you have to go around door to door to see if anybody wants to buy.
Yeah.
Well, I got to a certain level and then you get put into a raffle. And once that happened, then I drew my name and it was a VCR. But I didn't have a TV in my room. We already had a VCR. And there was no eBay. So I basically just had another VCR.
Yeah.
I just kind of sat.
That's shitty. I feel like if there was something, it'd be very easy for me to remember, and there isn't. So I would say no. I can't recall anything.
Yeah, my family found the gray M&M during the gray M&M millionaire contest. You got $1 million if you found the gray M&M. My mom was making Rice Krispie treats. Homemade ones should always have M&Ms in them. I will not eat them without it. It's a game changer. Anyways, we found the gray M&Ms and we thought we were millionaires. Turns out we had won like second or third place, which was a year's supply of M&Ms. Which at the time,
that's
for
still
me,
good.
I mean, that's a huge win.
I was a fifth grader. They just sent booklets and booklets of hundreds of free M&M coupons. To me, that was better than money as a fifth grader. To be on the bus with a pocket full of free M&M coupons, get out of here.
That's how I felt when we had Starbucks as a sponsor and they sent they sent me like probably 500 gift cards to give out when I was on base. And I felt like King Dingling when I was handing out Starbucks things. I went in there and I went into Starbucks with like 10 of them and they all had like 25 or 30 bucks on it or whatever. And I just added it up and I said, put these on the window. Like whoever's coming through the drive-thru, just pay for it until it's gone. And I sat there and watched people's faces and like how much they enjoyed it. And I'm like, I did this when I really didn't do anything. I was watching the Starbucks.
It's a good feeling. It's a great feeling. Well, big or small, winning anything feels pretty good. And for Sung Ha Ju, a 44-year-old Air Force veteran, one disaster kept leading to the next during the coronavirus pandemic. This story starts out as a bit of a downer, I'm not going to lie. He loses his job during the early weeks of the pandemic, then his home, then his van, then his other sources of support. And by the time coronavirus vaccines became widespread, he was arriving destitute at a D.C. homeless shelter. Meanwhile, DC had lotteries with big ticket prizes, including a free car, $10,000 grocery store gift cards to people who were reluctant to get the vaccine. They were trying to get people like, come get the vaccine. You might win something. On his first day at the shelter, he went and got the vaccine. And this week he learned to his great surprise that he had won the lottery, the vaccine lottery. His prize, drum roll, please. A10, please. I was thinking, oh, maybe he won like a big chunk of money or something. Sounds like he needs it. A year of free rides on the DC metro system. Well, he says that it's a boon that he badly needed and one that will help him travel to medical appointments, social services, and other important outings as he gets back on his feet. This is literally God sent. I am so grateful for this, he said. It's just out of nowhere. When I thought everything was going wrong, this really helped me out. This puts in perspective.
I could see that. Like, you know, because sometimes whenever you really do have those series of unfortunate events and you feel like lemony snicket, like you can just one little thing can turn your tide. And you kind of look for that in sports, right? Like if you are a football team and you're down, you're looking at it, it's the second quarter, you're down 21-0, 28-0, and you go out there, you're the offensive coordinator, like, let's just focus on getting this first down. We don't need to have a three and out. You get the first down, the crowd responds, and you almost can breathe a sigh of relief. I'm like, okay, let's focus in. We could do this. You get one win and you can build on that.
I thought you were going to say when your team is just terrible for long enough and then you finally get a once in generation type quarterback.
Oh yeah, that would work too. I went with more of a micro example. You went macro. That's fine.
Yes.
All right. But this story I kind of wanted to share because it's COVID this past year was such a slippery slope for so many people financially and everything. And you read about veteran homelessness and how easy it is to fall into it. And this story to me exemplifies like truly how easy it is. 15 years in the Air Force. And then he was working as a mechanic at a car dealership in Virginia when the pandemic hit. He got furloughed from his job and then realized the job's not coming back. Like this business fell apart. So he had emigrated from South Korea to California as a teen. So all his family's on the West Coast. He gets out of his service. He's on the East Coast, doesn't have enough money to get back home. So he finally saved up money from his unemployment checks to start his own business during the pandemic. He bought a van and became a mobile mechanic. He was just driving around Virginia doing oil changes and making car repairs, like making do with what he could. So he was stretching to pay his rent, put a van in his bed and moved into his van instead. So now he's homeless. He's living in his van. Then his van breaks down. Then someone steals all his mechanic tools. Then his food stamps expire. He runs out of food and water. It gets, he's in the van alone. He's starting to realize, he says, that he has PTSD issues that he had either ignored or was too proud to admit. And then the van got repossessed. He's on the street for days until he passes out in a hot day. That DC heat is no joke. An ambulance takes him to a hospital and he ends up explaining to the front desk woman, here's all my recent struggles. He's just kind of letting it out. She and her friends pull money together for him to get an Uber to a DC homeless shelter. That's where he gets the vaccine. That's where he wins the lottery to get all the year free pass of Metro tickets and stuff. And so now he says it's really started to turn things around. All his appointments, medical visits to the VA, he was doing that on foot before.
Oh, wow.
He was walking miles in DC's muggy summer heat from his shelter all the way to other parts across Anacostia and stuff where he had his appointments. Thanks to the vaccine lottery, he can now ride trains and buses free. How did they know I needed this? He marvels. Soon, he says, he hopes he'll find a job in DC and he can't wait to take the Metro to work. I just thought that was a story of like, man, you sometimes you forget how good you have it and how lucky you are. And what other people are going through. And just to hear how, cause I read it and I'm like, oh, he won a year pass on the Metro. And then you read it and you're like, no, I'm doing pretty well. And that's why I kind of scoffed at that. Like not doing pretty well, but like, I don't know. I sound like an asshole. No, probably, actually, but it just really put things in perspective.
What you're saying is totally makes sense. And I think that having that one little thing that gives you a little pick me up is what you need sometime. And hopefully he has a lot more coming than just a fucking Metro card. Hopefully he gets back on his feet and finds a job. And maybe one of these articles is the reason why he did.
Yeah, sure. I would just like to officially though, by the way, I'd like to take back my womp womp.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But he has a mental health provider who's also helping him reapply for food stamps, veterans seeking permanent housing. This transitional home in Southeast Washington's helping him out. So all these little things are starting to pull back together for him. But anyway, sending good vibes his way. If anyone in DC has a van they're trying to give away, we know a guy who could use it. But I just thought that was kind of a sad yet feel good story. Somebody turning things
around.
Yeah,
and if you're one of those people and you happen to be listening and you're struggling, the Military One Source is a great way to try to check that out. They have, if you have a phone and you're listening to this, you have access to a phone. So you can call them up and see what options that they have, because a lot of times veterans get caught in that as well, where they don't know where to reach out to. And there is so many programs that want to help you out. You just have to know where to find those. And sometimes that could be difficult. Military One Source is kind of a one-stop shop to help you find people who can help you find you whatever aspect of your life that you're in at that moment. It is a rough thing to do. So thanks, Kate, for bringing that story to light. And hopefully he gets hopefully gets back on his feet soon, because mechanics are coming back in a big way. All these shops are opening back up. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that opens up so we can use his skill set as well. A skill set that was used in Antarctica by some friends. See, that was a better transition. Right? That was a bit better.
Proud of you.
Yeah. Some New Zealand pals. Thank you very much. So, and New Zealand, I love New Zealand. Every time they're in the news, they're doing something awesome. I have so much respect for New Zealand. Almost every time they're in the news, it's because they did something great and they helped somebody out.
Mm-hmm. They might be the
model country right now.
And their accents are fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Big time
fantastic. So this story comes to us from military.com, and it says an C-130 was rolling down the strip and it landed on an icy Antarctic runway late Sunday night to rescue an American suffering from a serious medical condition at the Mercuro Station, a risky medevac mission the New Zealand military said was its first using night vision technology. This is one of those missions that will test the crew and the pilot skills, said U.S. Army Colonel Ian Murray. You're landing a giant aircraft on ice at night.
That's a show I would go pay tickets for. Giant aircraft on ice at night. Mm-hmm. I would pay at least $40.
Presented by our good friends at Planes, presented by Pixar.
Yes. Mm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So that would be a good one. Mm-hmm. You're landing a giant aircraft on ice at night without lights and under night vision goggles. It's winter in the Southern Hemisphere, lest we forget. And the flights to Antarctica are rare and difficult, but the evacuation ensured the patient got medical care unavailable at the station. The two countries conduct scientific research in Antarctica and have a longstanding partnership. The Royal New Zealand Air Force flight with 13 crew members and medical personnel departed the country's South Island just before 10:30 p.m. on Sunday. They said, typically we do these types of missions maybe once every 5 to 10 years. We were delighted and privileged to help out our Antarctic partners. Mercuro Station is the logistic hub for the U.S. Antarctic program and the largest base on the continent. It's located at the Hut Point Peninsula on Ross Island. We all know where that is, which is the southernmost solid ground accessible by ship. The Air Force crew had been trying to get to the southern continent since July 3rd, but bad weather had hampered their efforts all week. Flying to Antarctica is one of the highest risk missions we fly due to the lack of divert airfields and inability to get down and back without refueling. Flying in the winter presents even more challenges due to the extreme cold and rapidly changing weather and little to no visual warnings and changes that you would see in the summer. And I think that, like, if you picture what you know of Antarctica, you always see, especially in the wintertime, these swirling winds, like the big time blizzards. And if you're out there and you only have one spot to go, Large on Podfathers just today was talking about his trip back from Las Vegas, and there was fog and rain that was over Newark when he was supposed to land. He got diverted to Rochester, ended up landing in Buffalo. That happens in Antarctica. You are hundreds of miles from where you could land next.
You're totally fucked.
You have to know, if we're going here, we're gonna have to get out, and you have to know what the weather's gonna be. Scary.
Yeah. If the plane lands, and then it's so cold they have trouble taking off again, and now there's even more people stuck there. Like, that's just that's crazy. And pretty cool that they knew that going into it, and it was worth it to them to save this person. So crazy.
And you're doing it for people that you don't know. Like, you are, like, if you, that's what I think is so amazing about a lot of these rescue people, like even like the rescue swimmer and the Coast Guard. You go out on life-saving missions, risk your life almost daily, like in some of these positions for the Coast Guard, and you don't know these people, and you're going out every single day just to be a good human. I think that's so amazing.
And
in a world where stories like the ones that Kate talked about in round one are so common, seeing stories like this where humanity comes together and does something great for an individual needs to be highlighted more, especially now.
Yeah, it's a level of sacrifice that just doesn't exist in the common everyday person, unfortunately.
If they did know you and they're like,
you're right. It probably is for the best if they don't know. Yeah,
Kevin's okay. I don't know.
And you know, Katie Facts had to bring it for Antarctica. Kate, what are some of your favorite facts about Antarctica?
If you guys are at the bar at the Old Enlisted Club tonight and you want to impress 23-year-old
Kate would love
23-year-old
Kate walks in and you want to get in them Hanes, here's a couple with consent. Here's a couple.
You want to make her shit another little rabbit turd.
Absolute. Antarctica is the highest, driest, coldest, and windiest continent on Earth, and the Antarctic ice sheet is the largest ice store on Earth. So picture this giant sheet of ice, 5.4 million square miles. The deepest it gets, 15,669 feet.
That's nuts.
That is a thick sheet. That's thick with two C's.
That's a thick boy.
That's a thick boy. 7,000 feet is the average thickness of the ice. It contains Antarctica, 90% of ice on Earth, 70% of the world's freshwater, and the coldest land temperature ever recorded. Picture, I don't know. I still don't even just trust how planes fly in normal weather. Mm-hmm. The nuts and bolts and the weight and the whatever. Negative 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
So you would imagine if you're up high, it'd be even colder than that, right? Because you can be in the middle of summertime on your your way to Hawaii, for example. You can look at the thermometer on whenever you're flying in the back of your seat, and it'll be like, oh, the air temperature right now is negative 20. And that's when you're on your way to Hawaii. If you're on the bottom side in the wintertime going to Antarctica, it's got to be crazy cold. And the inverse of that, shout out to Death Valley. If you're in Death Valley last week, new record temperature on Earth, 130 degrees.
Ooh.
Fuck that.
That's ridiculous. So you know what else you can tell people at the bar when you saddle up next to 23-year-old Kate? You say, what is the largest desert in the world? Most people will say the Sahara. It's Antarctica.
Yep. And if you use that kind of facts on somebody, you won't even need to use Roman swipes, but be prepared just in case she already knows that. They're a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting. They don't require a prescription. Roman can send you swipes too in a discreet, unmarked package. Each swipe is small enough to fit in your wallet. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipe out of your pocket, swipe it on, dry it, and you're good to go. That's all you need. Go to getroman.com/zero. You can get your first month of swipe for just $5. And when you choose a monthly plan, that's getroman.com/zero. Let's move on to a little bit of AI, little artificial intelligence. The next two rounds are going to really be some technologically heavy stuff. I'm excited about it because Secretary Austin has been a little more forthright than a lot of the Secretary of Defenses that we've had in the past, where it seems like he's speaking to the media more than we've had in a while. Even Obama's Secretary of Defenses wasn't in the news giving interviews and things like that all the time. Mattis certainly wasn't. Esper was pretty quiet as well. But Secretary Austin seems to be answering more questions, which I really appreciate. I like the transparency from the Department of Defense. And this is another example of that. Kate, walk us through what Secretary Austin was talking about at this big old AI convention that he went to.
Yeah, and since this is about AI, I'll be reading this in my AI voice.
Oh, great.
Defense Secretary Lloyd beep 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 Austin sweet spelled out the beep 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 Pentagon's plan for beep 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 art.
All anyways, right, thank you.
This is why they pay me the big bucks, folks.
2 hours later.
Anyways,
you know what? Now I kind of want you. I want you to do the whole thing. Go for it. Okay.
No, but he spelled out the Pentagon's plan for using AI to deter or fight wars, but pledged that the military will fix or pull the plug of any system that gets out of line. Isn't that how every movie starts? Oh boy, this thing could really get out of hand. Don't worry, we're on it. And then
The exact plot of Arnold Schwarzenegger and RoboCop.
RoboCop, exactly.
Exactly right.
Exactly. We're going to immediately adjust, improve, and even disable AI systems that aren't behaving the way that we intend, Austin said, unless they become smarter than us, Kate.
Yeah, exactly.
The Pentagon now has more than 600 AI projects in the works, significantly more than just a year ago. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, aka DARPA, that's our friends at DARPA, which has a long track record in such research alone, has more than 60 programs using AI, including systems that find and fix cybersecurity weaknesses. The Pentagon plans to invest almost $1.5 billion in its Joint Artificial Intelligence Center to speed up.
Me they're taking it seriously. If the military uses anything that doesn't start with a billion, they're not taking it seriously.
And that's just question, on the parking lot of this center. So crazy.
Does 600 projects, does that seem like excessive to you too?
Well, did you ever look at the line items they put out at the end of the year? They're like, here's all the government science research projects. And then like one of them's like a shrimp running on a treadmill. And you're like, wait a minute. What? What the hell?
Yeah. 600 seems to be a lot. Like you would think that you would, I guess you're just trying to throw everything at the wall and see kind of what sticks. Kind of like what happened with the coronavirus vaccine, where it was something that they really changed the way that they are trying to target HIV. And they used that research and it ended up happening for coronavirus faster than did HIV, and now they're going to use it the same thing. So maybe these 600 are interconnected in their own little Venn diagram, where if one of them happens to catch on, the rest of them will work as well. Maybe that's what they're going for.
Okay.
Yeah. But don't you worry. Austin said that adopting AI will not change America's adherence to the laws of war and democratic principles. Pentagon guidelines have general concepts about AI, but do not include specific rules for how it might be used with weapon systems. Senior officials have repeatedly declined to agree to any kind of restrictions on AI decision making.
I would love to be in those meetings. Like, yeah. if you're sitting in the big, like, okay, so we're going to have these AI things. We don't want them to kill people. And then you just have a bunch of generals and shit like, no, we need, all we talk about is lethality. If we can't kill people, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
Yeah. Don't worry. This kill robot is not meant for killing that we've been developing. So we're not going to cut corners on safety, security, or ethics. He said, our watchwords are responsibility and results. You know,
that is the first time words. I've ever heard the term watchwords.
Watchwords, better than buzzwords, I suppose.
Yes.
And we don't believe for a minute that we have to sacrifice one for the other. Last September, Congress released a bipartisan report urging the military to redouble efforts on adopting AI and autonomous systems, calling for a Manhattan Project type initiative to do so. That report noted that China has set a goal of becoming the leading AI force in the world by 2030.
Okay, what does that even mean, though? How do you deem yourself the leading AI force?
Well, they're using it in ways that we're not yet. Like they're like with their social credit score, essentially what they're doing, like where they can scan your face and they will, if you get in trouble on one train, they can scan your face and you can get booted off of public transport forever, like where you're not allowed to do it. They have all kinds of like in airports and things like that. A lot of times you don't even have to scan your passport in some of these advanced, or they're going to have this soon. They already know you're there at the airport. So whenever you're walking through, they already know that you have your ticket because they used face scanners to tell it.
Mm-hmm.
That's mildly scary, but okay. Also cool.
Well, speaking super of scary, this has raised ethics concerns, especially when it comes to experiments with weapon systems that could decide on their own which humans to kill in combat. So say, take a drone, take a
unplug
Reaper drone.
Unplug it, Secretary Austin. That's the one you got to unplug.
Plug that guy out.
It can't be deciding to kill by itself.
A Reaper drone has somebody sitting behind a desk. There's a human somewhere controlling it. We're taking the human away and saying, this drone knows who to kill and who not to kill. That's fucking terrifying.
That's
essentially
what's happening in Israel and Palestine with their Iron Dome, where it triggers something. As soon as the system senses that there's a rocket or a mortar round in the air, a 155 or what, it'll send all of these intercepting missiles to try to knock it out of the sky. That shit's not controlled by somebody. It's just essentially like Simply Safe for your entire country.
Whoa, Simply Safe.
I'm not going to do the ad read now.
There's you're not. Okay. I was waiting. Well, so the UN's been looking at this since 2013 and has begun considering whether such systems should be banned, especially after there's a Human Rights Watch campaign to stop killer robots, is what it's called. The Stop Killer Robots campaign.
Not to be confused with the show Doug that was the killer tofu.
Right, exactly. Right. Yes. No, you're right. AI will help the military make faster and better decisions, work together across different domains, get rid of old, outdated ways of doing business. And it's not just the military working to adopt it. China plans on using it for missions including surveillance, cyber attacks, and autonomous weapons. That's a feel-good vibe. Critics have argued that the speed of AI decision-making will make it difficult for humans to monitor and potentially override their actions.
So they're just going to get out ahead of everything and you won't even know to pull the plug, Chaps.
Yeah, but Austin said, don't worry about it. We're going to recruit and train really talented people, particularly young people who have the skills needed to do it. Don't worry, we'll find the right people for sure. And we all know AI and internet-y people are really great people all the time.
And they're all running to join the military. So
The military must also radically change how it thinks about technology. No shit, we are so fucking far behind.
His next statement is probably the most aware that you've heard somebody that's high up in the Department of Defense in a long time.
He said, some troops spend their day struggling with virtually obsolete laptops that are woefully behind what is available to the average consumer. And there are many college graduates and new PhD recipients who would never consider working for the military, he added.
See?
Yeah. So there you go.
Because why would you go from like MIT or like Cal Poly Tech and you have every single technological advance in the world that you could think of, anything that's on the cutting edge, you're there. And then you try to go log into a fucking tough book and you can't even connect to the internet.
Yeah. Do you have your clearance? Because we have our abacus out in there and you can't see it. Got all the beads out on it. So
and you're like, God, I can't remember my fucking password. What is it? Because it's got to have 18 special characters and all this stuff. Ridiculous. But I actually went to our social media or my social media and asked some of the folks that follow me that are in the military, what is some of the worst technology that you've experienced? Because that list is long and it is ranging. It is legitimately shocking that you can go to almost any military unit in the world and look around and you would think, how in the world is this the computer that you're using? Every single one sounding like they're grounding to a halt. And one of the big reasons why is because you have such a focus, and rightfully so, on cyber warfare and having informational awareness and informational assurance, where they're blocking any type of cyber attacks. But there's so many filters that are involved, it makes these computers essentially not even work, because you have so many layers of security that are all terrible, by the way, that don't, you can't even, dude, there's so many times that you can't even log into TRICARE online, TRICARE.mil online, to set an appointment because their computer system crashes. You can't do it there. You have DTS and systems like DTS that don't work. For years, the fact that the canine community, you still have to write your training down on a piece of paper that you print out. Then you have to go into three separate programs, three separate websites completely to log in the different types of training you do, instead of just giving somebody, a trainer, a laptop, and you do it on the, and it's uploaded instantaneously.
What are like the three, what are the three different sites?
There's no reason. There's no reason for any of this stuff. Same thing with all the different .mil. Like they have recently, they just announced that the $1 billion contract that was initially awarded to Amazon to have all the cloud-based storing for the military took that back and they're opening up again because Amazon's like, look, the things that you guys want are not necessary and it's going to make everything bogged down and then you're going to blame us for it. And they're completely right. Like the way that Amazon does it, just do it that way. Just let Jeff Bezos be in charge of the technology for the military.
Yeah, like, just adopt their platform and just put the
everybody. They're pretty good at logistics.
I'd say so. I'd say so.
Our military technology is.
I just got a little fired up about
you
that.
Did. You're very concerned about military technology, which is very, very admirable. There's one response here that said Blue Force Tracker. How do we not have Google or Apple Maps in our vehicles? Oh my God.
And those were the worst in Afghanistan. That was like our Afghan GPS system that we used. And we would also use it to send important messages from, say, you're out in an MRAP somewhere. There were times where I was supposed to like hop in the MRAP and send this info to so-and-so. And I'd be like, I can't, the Blue Force Tracker's down, or it's going to take you 45 minutes and we'd be sitting ducks here and we'd be fucked. And
you could legitimately probably do it better through a 1999 TomTom.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. That's 100% correct. So outdated. Yeah. So slow and crappy.
But everybody's talking about all the different training sites. Kate, you remember having to do MCIs, like the Marine Corps Institute, the Army Online Training. All of these things are just so bad. So the idea that if you can't even get a training website correct, you can't get a fucking com guy would do or com woman would do out in the field, those things don't work longer than 2 weeks at a time. So if we can't even get radios with an AM and FM frequency to work in a combat zone, what makes you think that you can legitimately have a system that's smart enough to know who to kill?
We were still using radios from like the Korean War.
Right.
Those giant crazy backpack with the, what are we doing? Come on, help us out here.
And I read a tweet, not this doesn't have to do with military technology, but technology in general, where everybody's sucking Richard Branson's dick and Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk about wanting to go to space and all those things. Dude, we did that fucking 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. 60 years ago, we went to the moon. Yeah. And now it's a big deal that Richard Branson went to space, like halfway to space. Why is that a big deal?
I don't understand
the $1 billion rush to go to space and why people are even impressed that they're doing it.
Ooh, you guys are going to eat those words. It's going to be a hot ticket item.
I mean, but can you imagine if you were somebody like Richard Branson or in this type of wealth where you have Jeff Bezos money, Bill Gates money, Warren Buffett type of money, and you legitimately said, all my money, I want it to go to stopping hunger in the world. I am going to pay for food. Whoever needs it, every grocery store is going to be free. Like, if you had that kind of capital where you could do that, why would you not? You would go down as one of the biggest heroes in the history of the world if you ended hunger, even for 10 years.
Think about floating around, man.
True. Just go to fucking iFly. We did that. It was fun.
Yeah, no, that's true. Good point.
No, that's, I mean, you know, credit to Gates. He's using his wealth to try to figure out some actual problems that are plaguing different countries around this
world.
How
to drink poop. Yeah.
Yeah. How to drink poop water, you know, things of that nature.
Even a real tiny one, a funny one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, would I go to space if offered? Yeah. I think that would be pretty cool, but I don't know if I have that level of wealth. I'm saying,
I mean, Captain Pay is pretty good, but it's not that good.
Can you imagine if I was just sitting on all that wealth and just didn't tell you guys? That'd be amazing.
I'd be fucking furious. Kay would be, she's been trying to get a daycare for 8 weeks and you don't, not gonna help her out.
Yeah.
No, but I was just gonna say, I think when you have that level of wealth, you just run out of stuff to do with it. So you start doing stuff like what Branson just did and said, oh, well, let's put a bunch of money into getting me into outer space. Great, Richard. How did what you did a few days ago help anybody else in any sort of way?
Well, this is where round four comes into play, because we are going to want to be getting better at going to space, because we're probably going to have to soon, because there's people among us and not from here.
Here's the interview with Ben Hansen. Now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have a UFO expert, former federal agent in the FBI. It's Ben Hansen. Ben, I have wanted to talk to somebody. We get into science talk a lot about space and the Space Force and if it's needed, if it's not needed. Recently, there was a huge report that came out from the DOD about UFOs and how they're kind of finally acknowledging it. For somebody that's in your field and has this type of specialty, how almost relieving or I guess like certifying your opinions, how much of a relief was that to see that report and like, yeah, they are out there?
Well, I think you kind of hit it on the head, because a lot of people who research in this field were hoping for more. I'm one of those that was just happy with what we got. To be honest, like, I was not expecting them to come out at all and to say, oh, there is an extraterrestrial presence. I mean, come on. But for the years that we've been doing this and people dedicated their whole careers to this, I think the basic tenet that the number one, the phenomenon is real. And our government has said that in memos, you know, back in the 50s, right after Roswell, in fact. And they said, look, let's just admit this is going on. And then there are craft doing things that have capabilities that are we can't explain. So nowhere in the report, which the public report is really down to about, I think it's 6 pages, you take the cover page and everything out. And it's a summary. It's called a preliminary assessment. So we are hoping that more will come out. There are people trying to get FOIA requests to get the classified portion, which went to the Senate and Congress, to get that whole thing redacted down to whatever they can give us. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to find the same thing. What it's going to say is that the phenomenon is happening. We are investigating, which is interesting, because up until a couple of years ago, we were told the government is not involved in an official investigation. We do have a game plan. They want to tell us that. You know, they're going to be encouraging the pilots and personnel to report these things. They're going to have a uniform process to do it. And that they're going to be better at data collection using better sensors. And of course, the bottom line of all this, people would say, oh, it's money, right? Get funded. Well, that's part of it. But they use the term national security threat, I think 7 or 8 times, referring it to it as such. And so that's also unique. This is the first time, for those who are geeks like me, if you go back to the end of Project Blue Book, which was the Air Force's, you know, foray into this, 1969, the end of it, they say, well, the Condon report that, you know, we commissioned to look at this, it's not worth studying. It's not worth studying because we don't want to put money into something if we can't find that there's any national security threat to it. See, and so now they've done the 180 and they say it is a threat. So for me to answer your question, I'm elated. I'm happy. I think that this will just further cement the idea in people's minds that these are not all delusions. These aren't crazy people. There are craft. They admit that they closed the door on it, but they're saying high probability these are not ours. They're not black projects that we're working on, and they're not our adversaries. But there's no evidence, they said, to suggest this is a foreign adversary. You know, Russia, China, heaven forbid this is theirs. When we start talking about capabilities that these craft have, we're in deep trouble. Deep trouble if you, that's what they're flying around.
Can you elaborate on some of the capabilities that they're seeing that these craft have?
Sure. So it doesn't say in this preliminary assessment, but we know because of the other FOIA documents and things have been released from the radar data, the eyewitness testimony of the Navy pilots in particular cases. And I've talked to several of them. We're talking about things, objects that can move 60 miles in less than a second, like disappear, reappear on radar 60 miles away. We're talking about objects that they tracked when they were scrambled off the USS Nimitz from about 78,000 feet down to the deck, okay, down to the water, and in some cases diving into the water in less than a second. So estimated, you know, well over 13,000 miles an hour in some of those maneuvers, up to 700 Gs, okay? So... I'm hoping this
If that was a person in 700 G's, your body would turn to liquid.
You would just melt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's the point, is that there's some propulsion system at play that is dispersing or displaying, I should say, inertia. So if there are occupants, even if they're not, the craft itself would have to displace that inertia so it's not felt. The physics of what we have right now, and I've seen a few of these very odd things, I really don't think they're ours.
Yeah, State Fair Tilt-A-Whirl is about as far as we've gotten. That's about
the gravitron. Yeah.
You think it's given extended credibility that it's, because to become a pilot in the military, you've got to go through all sorts of mental and physical testing. Do you think that's given a lot of credibility to, because, you know, you see these shows where some farmers like, I swear I saw it. And people are like, yeah, okay. But then once I started seeing these pilots come forward, I was like, oh, okay. I'm listening now. I kind of am really believing it. Have you been sort of like a safe space for them to be like, because I can see it being scary to come forward if you are a high ranking military person like that. Oh my God, they're going to take my clearance away. They're going to think I'm nuts. Like,
especially with how much they talk about conspiracy theories now, like everybody gets labeled a conspiracy theorist right away, and you don't want that title on you.
Do you
it's not only the military, it's commercial pilots. I mean, they even say in the assessment, it says that they interviewed airmen, airwomen, that they often described a culture of ridicule, of not transparency, not being able to come out and talk about, like exactly what you said. Now, to be honest, if you go back to the recommendations from 52, that's what the government recommended. Their studies were use ridicule, minimize these things, take away the mystique. And so they're just following Air Force policy.
Same as the mental health policy, I think it was back then. Just ridicule it away, everyone.
Right. And it's like, they're really afraid that they'd be not taken seriously. And so now, supposedly, they're reversing and saying, look, all right, we've admitted we ourselves have a program to look at this. And if we can't figure it out, we want to know from you. We want to gather information, which is a huge first step. And so I have had, maybe not immediately, but I have had more people come and talk to me, you know, you're not crazy. The thing is, the common person, though, if they were interested in the subject and they look at the farmers and they look at the people, the common person who's reporting it, there's an overwhelming abundance of evidence that the phenomenon was real, right? We didn't need the government to tell us that to the common person. But you do have those who will only, you know, swallow the pill if the government themselves puts their stamp of approval on it. And this is as close as we're getting right now. They're telling you, yes, okay, it's worth studying, it's worth putting money into, it's a national security threat.
And this has been a huge change in the last, I would say, probably 10, 20 years, because growing up, you would only see about UFOs alongside Bat Boy on like National Enquirer and things like that. And now you're seeing it in much more mainstream. And you being a former federal agent who actually studied paranormal activity, how did you get into this field? And when you found out this field existed inside the government in order to investigate, what is the process in order to become almost like an expert in this field?
Well, I guess I should clarify in saying that same sentence, I didn't do anything with the federal government with paranormal activity or research. Okay. Nothing at all of that. I had national security and criminal, you know, investigations. My focus before going into the Bureau was actually in child sex crimes. Mm-hmm. So I had several years of doing that. So don't necessarily, I'll answer it in one sense, I do think that having a background in interviewing people and using deductive reasoning is very helpful. But I also hear the term trained observer thrown around a lot. And how they'll use is they'll say, a UFO witness will see something and they'll say like, well, you know, we're not quite sure that they're reliable because they're not a trained observer, like a pilot, military police officer. And I laugh at that. Like, we did not have a trained observer day. Okay. Right. There's not a day where you sit down and like, this is how you look at things and how you document them. No, anybody can go outside and the average person probably can tell you when something is the planet Jupiter versus an object that looks like it's lying in your yard. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think we do a disservice to people by saying they have to be expert in order to provide reliable testimony. That's the first thing. But you know, coming from my background, I do think that by far I've learned more outside than I have inside about what the government may or may not know. As your audience knows, a lot of them have clearances. And, when I had my top secret security clearance, when you get in there, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get all the secrets. I could probably just go read anything. No, it's not like that.
It's like you could be a professional basketball player, but are you playing in Turkey or are you playing in the NBA? Like there is levels to security clearances.
There are.
Well,
and you have to be read on to certain projects. And so the top secret information is kept in SCIFs. It's very controlled. You have to have a reason to know those things. You don't just go poking around. And so my point being, if there are special groups that these agencies have, and you can even get into Men in Black and all that stuff, if there are, there's a very, very few number of people who actually know about them. And, you know, the fact that our government has now admitted that they have had a program, parts of it were classified, but it went under everyone's noses, mm-hmm. you know, started with Harry Reid proposing it. And for all those years, $22 million, nobody really took notice of it. You know, what else could they be doing?
And how mad were you that you're like, I wish I would have known, I would have really thrived in that unit. God damn it.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on.
What the heck? But people were curious. Chaps put out on his Twitter, you know, do you have any questions for Ben? And a lot of people did want to know, how did you get into this and when did it become
a huge part
of your life?
I was far into this before. You can see probably E.T. behind me somewhere.
Yeah.
That was the first movie I ever saw. First movie in a theater I remember seeing. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated with space travel. I was a geeky kid, you know, wanted the telescopes and things. And when I was about 8 years old, I started clipping out newspaper clippings because the 80s were, like now. It was a big time for a UFO, what we call flap, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Close Encounters had been out for a while, but I remember watching that movie and buying these books that were beyond my reading level just because I wanted to know everything about UFOs. But it scared me. It scared me, the covers of the books, things like that. And then I would hide them when my friends would come over because I didn't want them to see. It was a very geeky thing. And you know, it was kind of how it was growing up. And so I've always had an interest in it. It wasn't until the TV show opportunity on Sci-Fi, which Fact or Faked was the first TV show that I did. When that opportunity came up and I was already switching careers, you know, for a number of reasons, it allowed me to focus full time pretty much on doing that. And so, you know, we've done everything from mermaids to ghosts to everything, but UFOs has always been my favorite subject. And it's the thing that I think I know most about, because, you know, like, this is half of my UFO books. It's like, you've got to learn history with UFOs. And that's kind of different than the other stuff.
And people were asking about, but on Chaps' Twitter, people were asking about that too. All the way back in history, like hieroglyphics and stuff like that, there's these things that seem like people are talking about UFOs even before, you know, modern times. Do you believe that there's something to that too?
I do believe there's something to it. I know a lot of this was popularized by the TV show Aliens, right? Mm-hmm. And I know people who began and worked on that show and everything, and I really like it, I do. But I think they only expected it to last a season, that they had enough material. And then they started kind of looking at everything under the lens of, you know, could it be UFO? So I think there's a stretch there for sure. However, some of the locations that I've been to, and you're trying to research how far back people have seen things, it does go back in some cases hundreds of years. You have petroglyphs and things that are very, very strange. You know, it looks like alien creatures and spacecraft that they're painting on the walls. So it's really hard to know how far back, but the government report does not give you a history of anything. It doesn't even go back to Roswell. It just says, well, it acts as if this started happening a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I think it's absolutely fascinating. Like the way that people almost, it's UFOs and the study of UFOs for a lot of people, especially where I'm from in the South, is almost like the inverse of religion, where people can look for answers in religions for things that they don't understand. Whereas they will say, no, there can't be UFOs because I can't wrap my head around that there's life forms in other areas. And that's scary to me. I recently saw this clip of Carl Sagan, who is a astrophysicist and scientist who passed away. And he was talking about Star Wars and how some of the aspects of Star Wars led him to a discovery that people don't even think about. Whereas Star Wars, even when you're talking about aliens or life beings from other places, they look like us. And he was talking about the evolutionary traits of how humans got to be at this point and what aliens would be, or what we would consider to be aliens from other life forms. Are you super interested more in the technological aspect or the being aspect behind UFOs?
That's a good question. Probably both. I think that, like, if we are being visited, it might be by multiple races, if you will. I don't like lumping it all together. They could all have different motivations, different technologies. I have thought a lot about what they would look like, and there's laws in the universe. They're probably symmetrical. It's probably not like a, you know, giant blob of some sort. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But they probably have two eyes, you know, two arms, two legs, for functionality, you know. And so I do take those into account when we're talking to alleged abductees and the patterns, you know, and what they're reporting. And now the technology too is difficult to pin down, because it seems like there's a pattern from the 50s until now where we're seeing more of one type of craft. Mm-hmm. So for example, the 50s and 60s was a lot of saucers and nuts and bolts types of discs, right? And then you got into the 70s and 80s, and there was a lot of, there's actually more triangles sighted now than there are saucers. And then finally, in these last couple decades, we have what I'd say light phenomena. So you can't even necessarily say that it's a tangible thing unless you were to touch it, I guess, if you're that close, because they'll appear sort of like an orb, intelligently controlled, sometimes morph into several, and then disappear and reappear somewhere else. You know, the Tic Tac UFO videos are kind of maybe similar to that, in that it looks like a solid object, but, you know, there's some shape change, there's instantaneous, you know, popping up in different places. And so, I mean, it all interests me, to answer your question.
The more I see about it, the more I have like a million questions. I'm like, well, if pilots and military are seeing them, maybe that's because they're coming specifically to check out our military because they're planning something, or, you know, or what, maybe they're so advanced, they just laugh laugh at us. They come by for a good laugh. I don't know. But you talk about national security. Do you think, like, if they have this technology, they would have already done something by now? Like, because I feel like the public's reaction at large was pretty chill about this, right?
It is, because they're not landing on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
Right. The majority of people, the surveys, I think it was at least half, maybe a little more, already believed it's possible we've been visited, which is pretty huge. Mm-hmm. So for the government to say, yeah, we don't know what these things are, really just says to the public, your friend Bob down the street's not crazy. He probably really did see mm-hmm. something. So the urgency is not there. And I compare this in my lectures to having news about war, right? If you have hear about what's going on in Afghanistan, and let's say it was a really bloody week and a lot of people died, the news makes a big deal about it. But if you're not actually there and you don't have family members serving, you feel really distant. And so the next week it just kind of fades away and loses the impact. Although the war's still going mm-hmm. on, right?
Yeah. There's so definitely proximity concerns for sure.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. So it's not here. So if you see a video of someone, you know, across the country that saw a light and the light wasn't threatening, but it was doing weird things, you're like, well, that's interesting. Or years ago, the Navy filmed this thing, it was doing this and that, but it didn't hurt anybody. You know, you might think about it for a couple of days, but it's not impactful enough for most people to cause them to be motivated to demand the government tell. They're like, yeah, they'll let them do that, you know, figure it out. Maybe they'll come out one day. But until it's on your doorstep, until you have mass sightings like the Phoenix Lights, you know, 97, or things were undeniable, I used to think that we were okay and that we were grown up enough to accept this. And then COVID happened, right? And people were like nearly killing each other for toilet paper. And I'm like, maybe we're not grown up enough. Yeah.
Good point.
Right? Maybe if there are secrets, maybe we need to ease into it. And I'm not saying that's what's happening, but it's possible that if they do have more information, that it's going to slowly come out to, you know, get us used to it piece by piece.
And then last question for me, it's not just the U.S., I'm sure, that these sightings are happening. Is the U.S., did it say, are they in cooperation with any other government? And does any
or
other
cahoots.
Or cahoots or does any other official government also say, yes, we agree. We know there's something else out there, too.
Well, hopefully that's what comes out of this. One of the things we'd like to see is a collaboration. There was a United Nations hearing presentation that was done in the 70s on the but not since. Grenada sponsored it. And so we'd like to see that again. We'd like to see cooperation, because supposedly a lot of these other countries have released their files. I don't know if that's entirely true that they've dumped them all, but if you look at the news in Russia and in China, they're having the same encounters, right? So they're over there wondering if it's us. We're wondering if it's them. We need to just get together. And of course, intel being aside, we're not going to give away anything we actually have, but we need to sit down. I'm like, look, let's all agree. Mm-hmm. This is beyond, we like your stuff. We like what you're doing over there. Well, we're concerned about what you're doing here, but we're sure that the tech we're seeing is not yours. And you know, it's not ours.
I can't believe Russia hasn't said it's theirs yet. Been like, yep, that's us. Yep. We're crushing it. So put your weapons down. Now, yeah.
That's part of the game though, isn't it? Like, I think the reason they're not doing it is because if they have no control over it, they would almost rather publicize it as a psychological kind of a game on us to say, because look, we do this. China does it. When they come out with a new fighter jet, they'll leak information. They'll put it out there and like, oh, it made a flight and somebody saw it, you know, because it's the unknown. It's like, well, how much better is their stuff than ours? And so you let out a little bit of it. And if you can't control a UAP, a sighting that it's not ours, well, don't come right out and say, we're absolutely certain, you know, this.
Yeah. You want that psychological deterrent there anyways. Right. Like we talk about psychological deterrence pretty consistently on this show, and like having the weapon systems that you have, and you see it even with terror groups. If there's a bombing or a suicide bomber somewhere, they'll have five or six different aspects, terror arms that are claiming responsibility. And that's essentially what's going on here.
Oh, free press.
Last question that I have, it was probably the most common question on Twitter, and I think this is how we'll close it out. What's the obsession with aliens and people who say they have been abducted by aliens with anal probes? Why are we going straight up the butts?
I don't know. I have yet, honestly, I've not talked to an alleged abductee who said there's an anal probe. Some of these
blame South Park for those rumors.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, some of these movies, if you take, for example, one of the very famous cases, the Travis Walton case, which was Fire in the Sky was the movie, right? I would say 80% of what's depicted on that scene inside the craft didn't actually happen. And Travis has come to terms with it because it's how he felt, but you really need to read the book to know that they didn't put him in a cocoon thing. They didn't take a needle and, you know, poke it down to his eye. None of that happened. And so I think people kind of get the idea that these abductions are like torture sessions, and it's very different. They're frightening. The people I've talked to, it's frightening, but at best they just seem, like neutral and not caring, as if you're like maybe, you know, doing an exam on a rat, but not torturing the person.
Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to get more in the weeds with you on information that you're putting out consistently, where could they find your work at?
I'm probably most active on Twitter, which is just Ben Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, 00, on Twitter, on Facebook, and then on my website, benhansen.com, I post the stuff that I'm doing lately. But the best stuff right now, this summer is going to be packed. It's going to be packed with TV shows coming out. We have right now Roswell, The Final Verdict is like a 6-part miniseries on Discovery Plus, where we use really cool AI technology to try to determine whether these witnesses were telling the truth or not. And then we have some other UFO specials coming down the line soon. Cool.
Very nice. Cool.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time. If you're feeling insecure about the UFOs in the area, maybe you should go to simplysafe.com/ZBT because they have the best home security system in the world. I can't be sure that they can stop aliens or UFOs, but Chad and Eleanor Lawrence designed their first security system in their kitchen, and they did it for a very personal reason, my friends. It wasn't UFOs. It was that their friends had just had their home broken into, and they were struggling to find a security system that was simple to set up. That's their example. I have a better one just for me. The other night, I told you guys how we've been having insane storms here. It's like almost every day I've had to cancel interviews and things like that because there's a time period for like 3 or 4 days where my power was going out like every 30 minutes and I couldn't stay online or do any of that stuff. Well, in the middle of the night, we had this huge storm. I usually go up every night and make sure that all the doors are locked and do all that. My wife calls it the man checks. Ironically, like I have to do my man checks at night to make sure everything's locked. Well, one night, the French doors that we have on our back porch swung the fuck open. Wouldn't you know it, I had my Simply Safe system
set up.
Should have
been American doors. That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, exactly right. Those pussy French just blew open. Let anybody come in just like right. They do their country. Mm. Next thing you know, I had an alert. Alarm went off on my Simply Safe app. It was like, hey, your doors are open, you fucking dick. Go close them. So I was like, okay,
is that what it said to you verbatim? Because I hope it did.
You should be able to set the alerts to Marine Talk. Yes. That would be sweet.
Hey there, Yoo-hoo, your fucking hatch is open. Go, go secure that shit.
Okay, portholes.
Yeah. Hey there.
Wait. No. I need your Simply Safe system to be just for Sergeant Lugo.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Mega people feel safe at home with Simply Safe has been doing that for 15 years, Devil Dog. A passion to protect people not only drives everything, engineering detail and its products, but it also motivates them and you with every interaction with their customer. That's why you gotta go to simplysafe.com/CBT. Good to go. Simplysafe.com/CBT. 60-day free trial. There's nothing to lose.
60-day free trial.
And what would First Sergeant Lugo say if your front door was open?
He would be very upset, honestly. Like, that's not even joking. He gets so pissed. He didn't talk to me for like 4 months because he thought I was making fun. I was like, I do your voice because I love you, dude. Like, you're my biggest mentor that I had in the military.
Okay,
he's like, dog. Fuck you, dog. Like, and he'll hang up on me. I love it. It's like him and I, he and my wife, really are the only two people who constantly just shit on me. Like,
my wife
and Lugo are essentially like Kate and I to cons.
Yeah.
And add Alex into the mix, and I just get
pissed. Add Alex to the top of the list, I would say, for sure. All right, let's move on to round number five. We've had stories like this before. It's amazing that this type of thing is so common, where either people or planes or objects from planes fall through folks' roof on a consistent basis. And it happened again in California.
It sure did, chaps. A British paratrooper was training with U.S. troops, and he crashed through the roof of a home in California during a halo jump when his parachute failed to fully deploy. The soldier received minor injuries and is recovering well, said a spokesman. The UK military always tries to minimize the disruption caused by exercises and continues to be extremely grateful to the support from the community for critical exercises such as this. The British Embassy didn't disclose which British soldier's unit, so they're not saying who, but halo jumps are usually associated with special ops. The training was conducted out of Camp Roberts, California, and the military, you got to be ahead of these folks. U.S. Army, what the fuck moments was the first to share the images of this incident. The photo itself, first is a photo of the roof. This is on U.S. Army, what the fuck moments Twitter. A big hole in the roof with a parachute just gently laying on the roof.
It's like one of those clay roofs, like a Spanish style clay roof.
Yeah. And then inside is still attached to his strings, laying on his back, surrounded by terracotta tiles, and a man in a white cutoff t-shirt leaning over him like, hey man, you all right, man?
This one needs the TikTok music where it's like, oh no, oh no,
oh no,
oh no, 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 no.
Yeah, so it's the photo of the roof and then the soldier still again dangling. How he did not get
they taught him injured, how to dangle.
They really did teach him how to dangle. He's doing just fine. Basically, halo jumps, this is terrifying. I didn't know this. You jump out 35,000 feet, but you don't deploy your parachute until you're below 6,000 feet. No fucking thank you. No fucking thank you.
That would be so much fun. So much fun.
Hell no.
Yeah, absolutely.
The jumps are typically conducted to hide troops and protect them because at that altitude, planes are out of range of most anti-aircraft weapons, so you jump out of it, blah, blah, blah. The parachutist experienced issues in free fall, no shit, and was required to operate his reserve parachute. Although the reserve deployed, the parachutist did not have sufficient height to land on the allocated drop zone and was significantly disoriented and unfortunately hit a local resident's house. And I mean, to go through a roof, you've got to be going fast as shit.
Oh, to go through it is, I mean, it's pretty clean too. Mm-hmm. You know, like whenever you talk about an exit wound, the entry and exit wound here look essentially like a bullet.
Like a
where
comet.
You come in, like going in, it's clean, and then coming out, it's not so clean at all. He went straight through.
Yeah, it's a wonder he survived.
Really?
If I was the owner of this home, I would be like, I would be looking up who did my roof. I'd be like, okay, is it? They're not putting.
Well, you're about to get a new one. I mean, because and the British government's going to pay for it. Imagine that insurance claim. Like, you have to get on with fucking Travelers Insurance and explain to them that some British bloke flew through your roof, and they're like, okay,
yeah, okay, whatever. All right.
And you're like, seriously, I know you guys. I swear to God, to what the fuck moments? Go check it out. It's on Facebook.
I just can't believe he was conscious but stunned, with complaints of pain but no visible serious injuries.
That's crazy.
The people in the home were not around at the time. Nobody was home when this happened, so there was no further injuries, because he went right into their kitchen. It looks like he landed like right in the middle of their kitchen, right by the sink.
That would give you a Simply Safe alert too.
They have
crash alerts. Imagine sitting at work and being like, you get an alert and you check your security camera and there's some dude in a parachute sitting in the kitchen.
Well, I would be like, okay, John Quinones, where is he gonna come out and be like, I just want to know, in the photo, I mean, it looks like a local yokel in a cutoff white tee just leaning over him, like, if nobody was home.
What the fuck are you doing?
I just picture this guy in the white tee, like out letting his dog take a shit, and he sees this guy go through the roof. And he's like, what the hell?
But in that situation, you got to be glad that the parachutist is actually British. Because how can you get mad if you talk to somebody who flew through your house in California and then he has a lovely British accent and he's like, oh, my apologies. I didn't mean to come in here and bother your home. It's lovely.
Ultimate dream scenario.
You're a long way from home there, soldier.
Ultimate dream scenario for me. Say I read this story when I was like 13 or 14.
Well, 23-year-old Kate.
Prince Harry, when he was serving.
Oh, yeah.
I'm crashing through my roof.
have those sleeves halfway rolled up like he did in that, where he's trying to rush to the helicopter. Hey,
he crashes through your roof. Next thing you know, your basement's flooded.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
I bet I bet the parachutist did more than a little rabbit turd. No doubt about that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Nothing he would want to send to his friends. So.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Save Rounds and Alibis, which today is going to be presented by our good friends at Rocky Boots. If you need Rocky Boots, if you need any type of boots, I would go with Rocky Boots. They most recently sided with the United States Marine Corps. They have a boot for you with the little Eagle Globe and Anchor on the side. If you're, no matter what branch of service, if you're a first responder, if you're a guy like me and you just mow your grass and you need to have some protection there, you could do that. They have tennis shoes. They have soft boots. They have hard boots. They have hiking boots. They have any kind of boots that you could possibly want. Make sure you get those because they are great. They're 25% off right now if you use the promo code ZBT at checkout. Go to rockyboots.com and the promo code ZBT. They are really fantastic. I don't just say that. I've been going on hikes with my wife. The new area that we live in has a bunch of trails with streams. We've been going up there. You know, a lot of times, even if they're like combat boots or those type of hiking boots, you'll get them, and for some reason there's almost like this slick rubber on the outside that you kind of have to scuff your feet. I fucking hate that, man. Like when you get new shoes and they're all slippery on the bottom, it's the worst. Not with Rocky. You go out there, you're going on these wet places.
You're a billy goat.
A little bit of moss or whatever. It's fine. You're good. Yeah, you're basically billy goats, by the way. The way that those things can climb.
It's unbelievable.
Do it.
Wild. I don't know.
I bet they have tiny Rocky boots on is what it is.
They probably do. That's what I would say. If I was Rocky Boots, I would say we're using billy goat technology.
Exactly.
Because you don't know what billy goat technology is, but if you're using it for people, I'm in.
Yes.
Automatically, I'm in.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on to Save Rounds and Alibis. Kate, we'll start with you today.
I just feel like I'm so sick of hearing myself complain. But ever since I got, we're talking a year now of physical ailments for me, like morning sickness and then blah, blah, blah. And then now it's my back. So like 2 months, I was talking about last time, but it's been like 2 months now. And then I finally went and got x-rays after I sneezed over the weekend. I took the baby down to surprise my dad for his birthday. Was supposed to be just one quick overnight and then back home. The next morning, I'm like, let's go out for a quick walk with the baby before I leave. I sneeze on the trail. It brings me to my knees. I'm holding onto a fence. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I like totally threw my back out, got stuck down at my parents for 3 days. They had to bring my cousins over to take care of the baby because I couldn't lift him. It was fucking awful, man.
You're not a full blown adult unless you haven't nearly thrown your back out while sneezing.
Yeah.
That's like the official adult thing.
No, Kate, I didn't realize it was to that extent. I knew you told us about this, but I didn't realize it was to this extent that you were incapacitated for 3 days.
It was so bad. I went and got x-rays. I was like, something has got to be seriously wrong. It's been 2 months now. And this just, my T5, 6, and 7, three spots in my spine are compressed. And so now I have to go get an MRI and all this other stuff. But it's like, it makes parenting an infant like nearly impossible. Like I cannot pick up my son. When I do, I can't breathe. It's horrible pain. It's like, it's just really getting me down, guys. It's really been like a huge bummer. It's hard to sleep because every time you move, it feels like a knife in your back. You're like, fuck, man. And the worst is like with back injuries and stuff like that, like as most people in the military know, because you're wearing all that heavy gear for so long, it comes for you eventually. Back pain always seems to get, but it's nothing but time. Like all I can do is wait and try not to lift him and like rely on everybody else until it gets better. It's just annoying. I'm complaining.
And that's the worst when you go to the doctor and they're saying, there's nothing that we could really do. Yeah. You just got to take it easy. And you're like, well, that's not a fucking option for me. Like it's not an option. Like you're a mom, you're breastfeeding. Like it's not an option for you to just do like hanging out and eating bonbons on the recliner. Like that's not an option.
Yeah. It sucks. Pat's become my baby chauffeur. The baby wakes up 2-3 times a night and I have to be like, hey, get up with me. I'll be on the couch, bring him over to me. Hey, I'm done. Take him back into the bed. Like it's crazy. So I just wanted to complain. No one's ever had it worse than me and has ever struggled more than
me. Yeah, I know you always feel bad about complaining, but there's so many people that are listening that are going through the same thing. And you're like, yes. You always want to everyone thinks that no one wants to hear about your suffering, but in reality, that's not true. Like they want to know, you hear other people that are going, other moms, I'm sure, are going through the same shit or have gone through the same shit. And they're like, thank you. It's almost like validating.
Yeah, crazy. People like to commiserate.
Because our core muscles are mostly gone for a lot of us. Come on, pregos. We're not fucking working out for the most part. Come on. So it's pretty easy to get hurt afterwards. So fuck that. Anyway, that's it for me.
time does in fact come for us all. It's like our friend Hootie said, time, why you punish me?
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Shout out Hootie, long time stoolie.
All
right, Nick, what about you, pal?
Yeah, I wanted to do a run. I told you guys I'm doing a race in a couple weeks here. It's a 5K run to support the veterans and their needs. So I'm doing that in New Jersey. So yeah, doing that in a couple weeks, doing it with a buddy of mine. So I got that coming up. So I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool.
On the docker. Yeah.
Very cool.
Get your tiny runners on. Maybe I'll go be on the sidelines because God knows I won't be running it.
Yeah.
Cons, what about you, pal?
Yeah, a couple of things, few things always. We were talking about veteran homelessness. So the Hoboken American Legion, one of the cool things is we have 6 apartments for homeless veterans. And we just got a grant from John Bon Jovi's Soul Foundation for $100,000 for our expansion to put in 18 more units. So I'm going to do my best to get old JBJ on the show. We'll see if I can track him down, if he's willing to do that. If you're listening right now, reach out to me.
That's awesome.
This weekend, I'm going up to Saratoga for the racetrack. I've never been up there. Have any of you ever been up there?
I've driven past it, and it looks like a beaut.
Yeah, so that'll be fun, I hope.
Very cool.
And then finally, Kate, you had a tweet this week where you listed out your 5 foods that you just cannot stop eating if you tried.
Yes.
And I was just a little perplexed with some of them. Like,
actually very impressed by this list. I think it's a very good list. The way that I would see this, this is, could your list be, let's put some parameters about it. Like, you're watching a movie, for example. Like, this is snacks that you're, if you're watching a long movie that's like 2.5 hours long, you can't stop the entire time.
You're sitting on the couch. Yes. You're all bundled up. Yes. This is.
Yes. So yeah, it was like hardest things to stop eating, but I just was confused about Blizzards because
always get an extra, extra large. I always get a huge one that normally you shouldn't finish in one sitting. You'll get diarrhea. Guess what?
Everybody's
finishing and get diarrhea.
I've never had a Blizzard and not finished it in one sitting. So that one confused me.
Does that not prove my point that you can't stop eating it?
No, because it's like, when I think can't stop eating, I think of something that is
almost unlimited, right? Like
So
Blizzards, you have a limited quantity.
Right. That's my point.
It's just one of those things that where if you get a huge one, you, as you keep going, you're like, I should put this in the freezer.
Blizzard is one where it doesn't matter how full you are. You're going to finish it.
You're going to finish it. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then M&M's, same thing. It's like, unless you just have a big tub of peanut M&M's.
Costco. Thank you. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that existed. Well, then, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So Blizzards was the only one I really had a made me scratch the old noggin.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Alexa. That's all I got.
All right. I have 2. One, I've been involved in the last couple of weeks with this Penn National Gaming. If you don't know and you don't pay attention to a lot of other Barstool stuff, Barstool is owned partly by Penn National Gaming now. And they have a veteran initiative, and not just veterans, it's first responders and things like that as well. And the program that they're putting together at all the different 41 properties, which are in 19 different states, so there's going to be one that's close to you, is pretty incredible. And it's not just one of those things where you go in, you get like a free meal or whatever. There's a lot of huge benefits. Like, if I was PCSing, you know, when you're PCSing, you get more money for per diem or more money for hotel stays and things like that. Penn National, they're going to give you 30% off at the hotel that you're going to go to, which is, I mean, 30% off at a hotel at a casino is a lot. And Large just went to the M, and just outside the strip, it's actually in Henderson, Nevada, but it's right there. You could go to these properties. There's some in Mississippi. Almost all of them have a large military base right by it, near Colorado Springs, for example. We are going to launch some shirts that if you sign up for the My Heroes Awards program, where you're going to get the shirt for free. Like, it's, you're going to get one of the Barstool shirts. That's a normal ZBT shirt, same feel, same design, everything with our logo. The one that we did is really cool. It looks almost like a World War II patch with our ZBT dog sitting on top of a missile. It looks like a old fighter pilot squadron type of patch. It's really cool. It's called My Heroes. Go check it out and look it up. Just search My Heroes for Penn National Gaming. You could see all the details. There's really too many to list. I was blown away when I was in some meetings about...
Yeah, you get like a tier. There's all upgrade kinds of tiers. Advantage.
Your families get stuff. Yeah, your family commemorative members get pin, different things.
A special players club card. Which if you're somebody who goes to these and like you're a gambler, blah blah, like that's a baller feeling. It's like the Overs Club jacket. It's like you just fucking want one, man. It's just cool.
Yeah, shout to Penn CEO Jason Oden. He's a huge supporter of our veteran community. Very much appreciated.
Yeah,
yep.
Cool stuff.
And the second thing, there's been a lot, we talked about it a lot last week where we talked about Afghanistan. Today, President Bush issued a statement about what's going on in Afghanistan. He talked about how he believes that President Biden is making a mistake in the withdrawal and the width of the withdrawal is going down. And inside President Bush's statements, it's very hard to disagree with what he's saying. And I think that if you are a person with a heart of any kind, you can understand where he's coming from in this and saying that all of the grounds that we've gained or that we thought that we gained with rights to women, rights to children, rights to people to have freedom of expression and any type of freedom of ideas that didn't involve the simplistic and the archaic and really barbaric tendencies of the Taliban, you lost all of that. You're going to lose all of that. We're already seeing those effects take place. So I understand what President Bush is saying there. However, it is hard to hear that coming from President Bush when that's the reason why this war has gone on as long as the intel wasn't correct. And that's not President Bush's fault. And I think a lot of times we look back and there's a lot of hindsight bias of what's going on. You look at what Colin Powell said on the floor of the United Nations, and he talked about there definitely is weapons of mass destruction. I believe that all of these people thought that legitimately at the time. But hearing it 20 years later from President Bush, you're almost like, come on, dude. Like you had your chance. It's not working for 20 years. What is staying going to accomplish? Are we going to be there forever? Are we constantly going to be doing this? Are we going to be involved in every single country across the globe that has humanitarian crisis that goes down? The answer to that is simply no. Like the American idealism where you could do that in every country in the world, that time is gone. And it probably was never here anyway. And we have to get more back on track of what we actually do for the military. And that's protecting the homeland here. And I also want to give a shout out because I think of all the different services across the globe that were involved, and there were so many nations. It wasn't just America. It wasn't just England. There are so many nations that helped out along the way in the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq. One of the leading member, the leading general for the Defense Department in Canada had a really touching letter that he penned because he knows that a lot of his military members have spent so much time in Afghanistan and so much blood, tears, treasure, and effort there. And we talked about it where Kate watching Afghanistan and what's happening here because she's actually spent time there. It hurts. When Iraq fell again, when Fallujah fell again, when the parts where Khan's was in Iraq, when that fell again, it's personal to you and it hurts to watch your work, you're essentially the blood of your friends who passed away. You feel like it means so much less because nothing really was accomplished. And everything has essentially, Iraq is the exact same. Afghanistan will be the exact same that it was. So what was this 20 years about? This general actually said it perfectly, I believe. He said, and this is his message, many of us have been watching the reports coming out of Afghanistan with dismay. The fall of Panjwa, I think that's how you say it, reported last week has hit many of us particularly hard. As we question our legacy, it served as the harbinger for all Canadians who served in the country, regardless of where and when. This district with its places and names, I'm not going to name the names, and the indelibility etched into the collective psyches of those who served there. The heat, the dust, the grape rows, the poppy fields of all provide a backdrop to what truly troubles us, our investment of effort, of sweat, and mostly of blood. Our Afghanistan experience has left none untouched, and many, including families, are scarred physically, mentally, and morally from it. Many of us have been asking for some years, was it worth it? Answers will be deeply personal, and not all have been reached a final conclusion other than time will tell. We can hold our heads high, knowing that we did everything our government was asked us to do. Served with valor and selflessness and were there to make a difference. The solution was never going to be a military one. And what we gave the people and the government of Afghanistan was time. The decision with what to do with that time was theirs to make. While history will be the ultimate judge, the current trajectory of the country leaves us with much pain and doubt. After their wars, our forebears were able to visit many of the countries in which they served, such as Europe and Korea, and put their sacrifices in context, giving them the meaning when they saw hope and prosperity rise out of rubble and ashes. At this time, it is difficult to envision having similar sentiments for our war. Where does that leave us? Should we hang our heads in bitterness and remorse, or should we continue to venerate the sacrifices of so many in our ranks and their families, to honor the noble commitment of service and making the world a better place, and the endeavor to learn from the experiences and grow to become better every day? While none of us can speak for them, I have to believe that our fallen would want to pursue the latter. If you are struggling with your experience, I ask you to reach out for help. And then he gives a bunch of different places that you can go to seek mental health, to seek guidance, whether it be spiritual or whether it be clinical. He wants you to go out and get it. I think that should be the message across the board. You are, if you served, and many of you listening are serving or have served, if you did, you did what your nation called you to do at a time where it needed you the most. There's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of about your service and what we tried to accomplish in Afghanistan and Iraq. That doesn't take away the responsibility for the humanitarian crisis that we have now created in Afghanistan as well. I think that both things can be true at the same time, where we honor the service that so many of us have provided to the country, while also recognizing and hoping amongst all hope that Afghanistan rises from the ashes as well. Sound the retreat.
Wow. All right, Campbell June, Hamilton, Okinawa, Hawaii, Alaska, Norway, 29 Palms, Yuma, Arizona. Oh, get up and get motivated this morning. Yeah. Woo! A few shout-outs. Sergeant Olivia and her son Samuel. Yeah, get motivated. Fort Gordon. Get up and get motivated. Lance Corporal Langley, 210 Golf Battery, Artillery. These guys, get up. Let's get motivated this morning.